Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Alvin Schmidt is the author of our book of the month for February, Faith Misused: Why Christianity is Not Just Another Religion. This new book is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number 1-800-325-3040, or learn more about Faith Misused at issuesetc.org. Find out how faith is an exclusively Christian word and how Christians can reclaim it in Faith Misused, the Issues Etc. book of the month for February.
And it goes to show that with these hate speech laws, which are so vaguely worded, so subjective, they can really be manipulated and used and arbitrarily enforced if you get someone in power who wants to make a point.
So many times you hear marriage today, people say, I didn't marry the perfect one. I missed the perfect one. I got stuck with someone who's not perfect. And so I need to leave this one and go find someone better. That's a selfish notion, a concept of the world that the devil loves to feed.
I'm, quote, just a mom, or I'm, quote, just a dad, or I'm just a good neighbor. I'm just a member of my congregation. I never did anything great. So this myth of the one great thing can lead to both neglect and regret.
What Jesus does, he sees the wrath of God coming, and he leans over, so all the wrath of God goes on him rather than on us.
Twins in Virginia love listening to Issues Etc.
The word faith is used very loosely nowadays by Christians and non-Christians. How often is it actually defined by Christians or non-Christians? And would the average biblically-minded Christian be able to define faith in a way that reflects what the New Testament teaches about that word? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc., coming to you from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We'll begin today's show, continuing our series with Dr. Alvin Schmidt on faith and Christianity's uniqueness. Then we'll look forward to Sunday morning, according to the one-year lectionary, talking with Pastor David Peterson about the laborers in the vineyard from Matthew chapter 20. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College. He's author of the Issues Etc. book of the month for February, Faith Misused: Why Christianity is Not Just Another Religion. Dr. Schmidt, welcome back.
Thank you for having me again. Quite pleased to be on your program.
Your book often notes that this concept of faith is rarely defined in most articles and books. Is this itself a misuse of the word?
Yes, indeed it is, because it really doesn't tell people what faith is. It usually ends up being a very subjective kind of concept. It ignores, for example, the old Christian understanding that goes back at least to St. Augustine in the 4th century, that faith consists of, he used the term, the Latin phrase, which I'll interpret or translate, fides quae creditur and fides qua creditur. The first one refers to faith as an objective entity, namely the teachings of Christianity as found in the New Testament. The second one is perhaps the only one that people tend to understand, is the subjective aspect of faith, that which people believe. For example, Paul wrote, for example, to Timothy that in the last days many will deny the faith. That is fides quae creditur, Christianity, the objective use of faith. When, for example, the scared jailer in Philippi asked Paul and Silas, what must I do to be saved? Paul replied, believe in the Lord Jesus Christ and you will be saved. That is the subjective aspect of faith, or fides qua creditur. Those two dimensions are almost totally unknown today among Christians, and one rarely hears them ever mentioned in any formal presentation. As a result of it, I quote an individual in the book, saying large sectors of contemporary Christianity are awash in a spirituality of unbridled subjectivism, end of quote. This phenomenon, I say, is especially unfortunate because objective faith is a vital component of the exclusive faith of Christians as taught in the New Testament. And that dimension, for example, when faith is not defined, people don't have any idea of it. I venture to guess that most people, Christians, have not even really heard, much less understood, that there is an objective faith and a subjective quality of faith. Typically, at best, they have the subjective in mind. And then, as part of that, they don't have a definition for that. It is sort of what you yourself intuitively believe or come to accept in life or even in a religious context. So yes, the lack of defining faith is in itself a misuse of faith. And I might add, I don't think widely recognized. In fact, we as Christians probably fail in recognizing it for the most part ourselves.
Given the fact that faith is rarely defined, when it is the main concept under consideration, what kind of faith then do these authors seem to have in mind?
It's basically a non-evidential faith, faith which has no evidence. It's the bitter fruit, I would say, of the Enlightenment, when, for example, faith was hijacked by redefining it, if you will, or giving an impression that faith is no longer based on concrete historical facts. The Enlightenment basically did just that. As I mentioned in the other interview, for example, that faith was still valid, even though what it's based on, like the miracles of Christ, his crucifixion and resurrection, particularly the resurrection, didn't happen. Yet if you believe that they did happen, even if they didn't, it is still valid faith. Well, that is not biblical faith. That is simply a fabricated example of faith, subjectivism made plain and simple. And that is what we typically commonly hear today. Faith has no evidence. In fact, most of the books that talk and articles about faith tend not to even seem to recognize this. They seem to operate with the idea that faith is a subjective phenomenon for which there is no evidence, including what the Christians call faith. And that is, again, another tragic misuse of faith, and we need to recognize it. That I have books in my office here written by scholars with the word faith, but never defined. And again, sort of assuming that everyone out in the audience that reads the book knows what is meant by faith. Well, they don't. When it's a subjective phenomenon, no one can really objectively say what faith is.
Do you think that most biblically minded Christians are able to define faith in a way that would accurately reflect the New Testament's use of the word?
Well, we have done in the church as pastors, clergymen, I think, a very poor job when it comes to defining faith. For the most part, when have you heard faith defined? In a sermon? Or, for example, even in a Bible class? Many years ago, it's really a century ago, in the early 1920s, a famous Presbyterian theologian, he was also a Greek scholar, and he wrote a Greek grammar book, Gresham Machen was his name. He says, clergy tell us, they preach about faith, but they never tell us what it is. Right on. In fact, he, as a result, wrote a book himself trying to answer the question, what is faith? I will argue that if you ask the average faithful church member to define faith, he or she would be very much stunned and probably stutter, not knowing how to respond, because we just have not done a good job of defining faith. That's in part why I wrote this book, to alert us to how faith is misused. And we aren't even recognizing how faith is misused today and has been for a long time. So we also need to remember that faith is where Christ is the object of faith, and that faith comes by hearing, and by hearing the word of God. It is not just some subjective belief that one has. One needs to be Christ-centered in terms of what faith is and what it means to each and every Christian.
You bring up the 18th and 19th century German theologian Friedrich Schleiermacher. He published a book in the 1820s titled The Christian Faith. How did his liberal theology influence so much of modern Protestant theology?
Yes. One of the surprising things I discovered in this research over the years was exactly Friedrich Schleiermacher. He lived in the late 1700s to 1834, about 66 years of age when he died. He had a tremendous influence in terms of how faith today is misused, and I'll give some illustrations quite early. He departed, well, I should first of all say, in 1821-22, he wrote a 400-page book with a long German title, but then shortened also to just simply what he called the Christian faith or the christliche Glaube. He did this with liberal theology, and by the way, has been seen as the founder of modern Protestant theology. And sadly to say, this is largely true. He departed from the theology of the Reformation early in his life. Here is a helpful letter that I will cite. He wrote a letter to his father, who was a devout Calvinist chaplain in the Prussian army. At the early age of 19, Schleiermacher wrote to his father about three decades before he published the Christian Faith book that I mentioned a moment ago. In this letter, he confessed the following, and I will quote, "Faith is the regalia of the Godhead, you say. Alas, dearest father, if you believe that without this faith no one can attain salvation in the next world, or tranquility in this and such, I know is your belief. Oh, then pray to God to grant me, for to me this is now lost. I cannot believe that he who called himself the Son of Man was the true eternal God. I cannot believe that his death was a vicarious atonement." End of quote. That is a letter that he wrote at age 19. He never changed his opinion in terms of what he just stated to his father. In fact, he became more pronounced about it. And this particular, I might mention also that he denied the incarnation of Christ. He was not, as the Nicene Creed says, both God and man. He denied the resurrection of Christ. He denied the atonement of Christ. In fact, basically overthrew, if you will, historic Christianity as defined in the three creeds of, namely the Nicene Creed, the Apostles' Creed, and the Athanasian Creed. He had different positions. He taught at the University of Halle for a while. He also, for example, was a pastor, a chaplain, and then most of the time, the latter parts of life, he spent in a Dreifaltige Kirche, Trinity Church in Berlin, and oddly espoused his theology, there, which in many ways highly departed from the biblical Christianity. He saw religion as the absolute dependence upon God, who shows himself in the attributes of omnipotence, omnipresence, his eternal attributes of eternal believing in Christ was the highest consciousness of God. True Christianity was not a set of doctrinal propositions, but inner subjective experience. Basically, this is a departure from, as Lutherans would say, basically back to Schwärmerei, where you no longer base your doctrines on beliefs, rather on specific doctrines. There was no objective knowledge about God, which of course meant he denied the divine inspiration of Scripture. And this is what motivated his theology, and then also how he made some very, very significant, I don't want to call them contributions, significant differences about faith. I will point out, for example, that we today have, well, first of all, he synonymized faith and religion. This was the first time that this ever happened in the Christian church. And this is what we see today in our day and age, that faith and religion are equated. They're interchangeable terms. That, of course, again, is another example of grossly misusing the concept of faith in terms of how the New Testament presents it as an exclusive concept. He destroyed the exclusiveness of faith by synonymizing faith and religion. But he did even more than that. He also pluralized faith. He, in his book, The Christian Faith, he coined a German word called Glaubensweisen, which means faith or faith pluralized. We today, for example, see this and have adopted this in many ways in our society today.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College and author of the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for February, Faith Misused. It's part two of our series on faith and Christianity's uniqueness. When we return, we'll hear more about the influence of Friedrich Schleiermacher.
This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we move farther along in 1 John with children of God, destroying the devil's works. Love one another greater than our hearts and test the spirits. Join me, Pastor Will Wheaton, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily 15-minute verse-by-verse Bible study on demand. Listen at thewordendures.org or on your favorite podcast provider.
For there is no other name under heaven given among men by which we may be saved. This is the teaching of St. Peter, and this is the teaching that we continue to hold to, and yet many in our world today struggle with these claims of exclusive salvation through Jesus Christ. If you'd like to learn more about how Lutheran doctrine compares to that of other world religions, you're in luck. The February issue of the Lutheran Witness is all about Lutheranism and world religions. Visit cph.org/witness to purchase a copy, or our website witness.lcms.org to learn more. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
For your next family vacation, consider Our Beach House, a charming three-bedroom vacation rental on beautiful Siesta Key. Just off Sarasota, Florida, Siesta Key Beach, consistently voted America's best, is just 100 steps away. Whether you're watching the sunset over the Gulf of Mexico or frolicking in the warm surf, you and your family will fall in love with Siesta Key. Check us out at SiestaKeyRentalGenie.com or call Virginia at 941-266-1858.
Memoria Press exists to promote and impart the classical heritage of the Christian West through an emphasis on the liberal arts and the great works of the Western tradition. The Memoria Press curriculum encourages the development of wisdom and virtue through the pursuit of truth, goodness, and beauty. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR22. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time. MemoriaPress.com.
Hello, Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin on this Tuesday, February the 8th. It's part two of our series on faith and Christianity's uniqueness with Dr. Alvin Schmidt. Dr. Schmidt, tell us a little bit more about the influence of Friedrich Schleiermacher and the modern concept of faith.
Yes. His declaring faith and religion as synonyms has especially in recent years evolved into numerous phrases using faith in the singular, now found in countless books, articles, and speeches, and sermons. The following I will cite are some examples. People of faith. And by the way, these are in the singular rather than in the plural. Person of faith. Women of faith, legacy of faith, new faith, contours of faith, faith event, faith journey, faith-based fraud, faith-based programs, leap of faith, faith crimes, violent faith, murderous faith, faith friendly, shape of faith, streams of faith, global rise of faith, faith vocabulary, interfaith, non-Christian faith, fleeing faith, why faith endures, triumph of faith, faith community, faith traditions, faith-affiliated schools, faith-driven, faith-formed, faith leaders, faith politics, also one publication has written about voodoo faith. Here we have examples of Schleiermacher's synonymizing faith and religion ending up in all these phrases that have appeared in literature. I didn't make these up. I've seen all of these in published literature, in many instances in church periodicals, but also in secular literature. Of these phrases, one really seems to stand out more than others, and that is people of faith. How many times have you or I not heard this? People of faith. What do they mean? Well, again, it reflects that faith and religion have been synonymized. It is not anymore that faith, in other words, has preempted the word religion. And faith in the plural is found in titles of books and articles today where it often shouldn't even be used or doesn't really make a lot of sense. For example, not long ago, there was an article in the Wall Street Journal that spoke about faith when in reality the word appeared only once in the article. Most of the other times it was the word religion. It's another example of it seems to be that you are with it, so to speak, if you use the word faith rather than religion, even though you were only talking about religion and not about faith. Not every author, of course, has capitulated to this practice. When one looks at, for example, at C.S. Lewis's writing, he did not use faith in his illuminating writings. We also had, for example, even in the 1950s, Will Herbert wrote a book, for example, Protestant, Catholic, and Jew, an essay on American religious sociology. When we look at recent books in print, we still find numerous books that focus on religion and do not see faith or faith. But for the most part, it's becoming, the word religion is hardly used anymore, it's always faith. But it's not only used in the singular, it's also used in the plural. And here, too, I will give you some examples. Along with faith in the place of religions in the title of books, we find the following. Asian faith, African faith, Eastern faith, Western faith, diverse faith, great faith, violent faith, a sea of faith, many faith, no faith, unchurched faith, low tension faith, high tension faith, other faith, permissive faith, world faith, organized faith, homegrown faith, foreign faith, multiple faith, community faith, different faith, competing faith, homogeneous faith, heterogeneous faith, non-Christian faith, and the oxymoronic godless faith, which really is an oxymoron. But nevertheless, these are examples of using faith phrases in the plural. And again, a spin-off of what Schleiermacher did when he synonymized faith and religion.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. It's part two of our series with him on faith and Christianity's uniqueness. When we return, how does pluralizing faith end up being heresy in the New Testament's definition? Is it possible for the Apostle Paul to teach the doctrine of faith alone without using the words faith alone? Find out in my column in the Latest Issues, Etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Katie Price Vogel writes about her journey from the false assurance of works in Roman Catholicism to the true assurance of Jesus' accomplished work in the Lutheran Confession. The free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
Did you know that many LCMS military personnel and their families are unable to receive word and sacrament ministry due to the lack of LCMS chaplains? Ministry to the Armed Forces is looking for pastors who will answer the call to serve as a chaplain to provide word and sacrament ministry to the men and women who selflessly serve our nation. Find out more about this exciting ministry by contacting me, Chaplain Craig Mueller, at lcmschaps@lcms.org. That is, lcmschaps@lcms.org.
Learn and grow with us at Redeemer Lutheran Church, 7670 East Jomax Road, Scottsdale, Arizona. The gifts of Christ are received every Lord's Day in the 9 a.m. Divine Service. Confessional, Evangelical, Sacramental, Liturgical. Lutheranism the way it used to be. Lutheranism the way it can be once again. If you're in Scottsdale or in the Phoenix metro region, we'd love to have you visit. And please also visit our website, RedeemerScottsdale.org.
Logia Journal, the Confessional Dogmatic Series. The works of Kurt Marquardt and many other resources are all brought to you by Luther Academy. Did you know that during this time of COVID-19, your purchases and donations help Luther Academy supply these same resources to pastors around the world? Please consider helping us with this important need through your prayers and financial support. Learn how you can help by visiting lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com.
Sophisticated Lutheran Apologetics. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by becoming an Issues Etc. congregational sponsor. Beautiful Savior Lutheran, Milton, Washington. Concordia Lutheran, Sykeston, Missouri. Grace Lutheran, Wichita, Kansas. Hope Lutheran, Spokane Valley, Washington. Mount Olive Lutheran, Duluth, Minnesota. Our Savior Lutheran, Milford, Illinois. Redeemer Lutheran, Scottsdale, Arizona. St. John Lutheran, Ray, Michigan. St. Paul Lutheran, Parkersburg, West Virginia. Trinity Lutheran, Valonia, Indiana. And Redeemer Lutheran, East Englewood, Florida. Find out how your confessional Lutheran church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click Support Donate, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation becomes an Issues Etc. sponsor, we'll publicize your church on the podcast, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the misuse of faith with Dr. Alvin Schmidt. He's author of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February, Faith Misused, Why Christianity is Not Just Another Religion. Can you explain why the pluralizing of faith is heretical to the New Testament's use of that word?
Yes, because the New Testament uses faith only and always for Christians. This is one of the things that is so rarely known, really not all known at all. As I point out in my book, I have been only able to find three scholars. The earliest one was William Henry Payne Hatch in 1917, an American Greek scholar, who wrote that faith was an exclusively Christian characteristic and concept. And then in the 1990s, I found a German New Testament scholar who said essentially the same thing, that faith was not an indigenous concept in any other religion, but was exclusively a Christian concept. And then more recently, Teresa Morgan, a scholar at Oxford University, said that even more plainly. She says, the concept of faith in pistis language never is used with reference to anyone but Christians. That particular knowledge from those three people, I have not been able to find a fourth person. There might be one, but in the 20 years that I've been looking at this literature, I have not been able to find the awareness that faith in the New Testament is exclusively Christian. In fact, this is what was missed, as I mentioned, I think, even a little bit the other day in my conversation I had with you, namely that Luther did it, and Luther was not the first one. The first one who did it, to do it, as best as I can determine, was St. Augustine in his book Confessions, which he wrote in the mid-390s, where he talked about the Christian faith, and he does it more than once. Obviously, when you talk about the Christian faith, you immediately, logically imply that there is another faith, and maybe more than one. That, of course, conflicts with the New Testament's exclusive use of faith. There is no hint, for example, at all in the New Testament about another faith, or that the concept of faith applies to another religion. This, as I said, the creation, or first to do it, was St. Augustine, and then we saw what happened when Schleiermacher picked up on the idea and used the title in his book, The Christian Faith, and then did even more when he synonymized faith and religion. So that is why, for example, it is very important to remember that, and this is perhaps difficult for us to, as Christians, to remember, because it has become part of the culture, and we today parrot the culture. We as Christians are no exception. Most individuals have no real culture consciousness. And it is just an example of how it is often hidden to us. And very often we pick up concepts and terms, as we do, for example, when we say the Christian faith, that conflicts with the New Testament. It's contrary to the New Testament. And that is surprising to us. And what's surprising is that even though we have had three individuals, one back a century ago with William Henry Payne Hatch, we have not picked up on it. As one of the endorsers of my book says, he went through the seminary, as I did, and never once heard from any lecture that the word pistis in the New Testament is exclusively Christian. In fact, we today can listen and hear the word faith applied to non-Christians. We'll hear, for example, he or she joined another faith, or faith-based program. Here again, you see, faith and religion are equated, synonymized. This is where we lose the exclusiveness of Christianity. And then it's easy to conclude that all religions, if they have faith, are equally valid, which, of course, clearly conflicts with the New Testament and Jesus' words when he said, for example, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes unto the Father but by me, John 14:6. Similarly, St. Peter, preaching in early church, says, speaking about Christ, neither is there salvation in any other, for there is none other under heaven given whereby we must be saved. It is that exclusiveness that is lost when we begin to use the word faith and religion as synonymous terms.
So what is the theological implication when secularists, and as you point out, even Christians, just kind of mindlessly parrot the culture by using these pluralized faith phrases?
Yes, and you know, we as Christians, even aside from what I just said in terms of the exclusiveness of Christian, the faith of Christians, should remember a very important passage in Ephesians 4:5, which states there is one Lord, one faith, one baptism. Yet when we speak about picking up the cultural language of other faiths in the plural, we are obviously either not aware of Ephesians 4:5, where Paul speaks about one faith. He didn't talk about more than one. There's one Lord, one faith, one baptism. That should ring a bell, but it hasn't. We hear that passage when we don't see the conflict, when we've perhaps the same day later on begin to use the word faith in the plural applied to non-Christian religions. Again, it's an effect, a fruit of what Schleiermacher introduced. It's also interesting, I might mention, that Schleiermacher has been greatly extolled by many for the last 200 years. But no one has ever picked up on what he did in terms of synonymizing faith and religion, which, of course, is deeply embedded in our culture today, as I mentioned when I cited the singular phrases of faith and the plural uses of faith that we today use and speak. And an interesting question I have, will we pay attention and begin to speak more biblically rather than culturally?
Can you explain in more detail why this use of faiths by Christians as synonymous with religions, as you've mentioned, is incompatible with Jesus' own use of the word?
Yes. A couple of phrases come to mind. And sometimes translations haven't done justice either, so to speak. The familiar statement that Jesus made when he said, "When the Son of Man will come, will he find faith on earth?" Well, Jesus really didn't quite say it that way. He said, "When the Son of Man will come, will he find the faith?" The Greek has that definite article there. That, of course, again, is a very clear-cut example. You can't pluralize faith. You can't, for example, talk about non-Christian religions as being faith entities. We also, for example, when Paul mentioned many will in the latter days depart from the faith, again, you have the definite article there. So the New Testament, together with Jesus, very clearly accents the exclusiveness of faith being only the language of the New Testament of Christ and the apostles like Paul, John, in their writings.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. We're talking about faith and Christianity's uniqueness. He's Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College, author of The Issues Etc., a book of the month for February, Faith Misused, Why Christianity is Not Just Another Religion. You'll find a link to this book at our website, issuesetc.org, or you can call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours and order Faith Misused, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Ask for The Issues Etc., Book of the Month for February. On the other side, we will look at Ephesians 4, verse 5, where Paul talks about one Lord, one faith, one baptism. Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Alvin Schmidt is the author of our book of the month for February, Faith Misused, Why Christianity is Not Just Another Religion.
This new book is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or learn more about Faith Misused at issuesetc.org. Find out how faith is an exclusively Christian word and how Christians can reclaim it in Faith Misused, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's Life Ministry is thousands of people sharing Christ's love and mercy and giving witness to our Lord's creation of life, His design for marriage and the family, and the God-given value of all human life from conception to natural death. Working with many partners, LCMS Life Ministry sponsors human care efforts that meet the needs of body and soul and provides resources and educational events for all ages. To learn more, email lifeministry@lcms.org and visit lcms.org/life.
One Lord, one faith, one baptism. You're listening to Issues Etc.
America's tradition of liberty depends on having colleges and universities that equip young people for the responsibilities of freedom. At Concordia University Chicago, freedom is a pillar of our education. We prepare our students to live as free, self-governing citizens. I'm Dr. Rachel Ferguson, Director of the Free Enterprise Center at Concordia Chicago. I invite you to visit us. Discover what it means for freedom to become a pillar of your future. Learn more at cuchicago.edu.
Lutheran Talk.
We have an ecumenical responsibility to hold forth the Scriptures and to bear witness to grace alone, faith alone, Christ alone.
Lutheran Music.
Listen anytime, anywhere in 2020 with the Lutheran Public Radio mobile app. Download for iPhone, Android, and Kindle at issuesetc.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about faith and the uniqueness of Christianity, a series we're doing with Dr. Alvin Schmidt, author of The Issues Etc., Book of the Month for February, Faith Misused, Why Christianity is Not Just Another Religion. What about Ephesians 4:5, where Paul talks about one Lord, one faith, one baptism?
Yes, it's of course a passage that really is ignored when we talk about other religions and call them faiths. Because obviously it conflicts with one faith that Paul talks about to the Ephesians in 4:5. And I might also mention, for example, that it's interesting that Schleiermacher's influence that we talked about a little before, when he coined a new word called Glaubensweise, which makes faith plural in the German, it's interesting that, for example, when he did that, he departed from the New Testament. Again, it's, you know, it's very interesting that the word pistis, meaning faith in Greek, in the New Testament, is not used in the plural. The Greek does have the word pistis, which is the plural word for pistis. The New Testament never uses it. In fact, it is the singular pistis that is used exclusively, and the word pistis in the Greek grammar, all the way back to Aristotle and the like, never meant faith, never was the plural of faith as it is used when Schleiermacher, you have coined the word Glaubensweisen, which means faith, plural in the English language. Along with that, because of Schleiermacher, the term interfaith has now become very, very common. You hear it a great deal. Only a couple of years ago, in doing my research, I came across a book that was published in 2015 by a Christian by the odd title of Hegel versus Interfaith Dialogue. He is highly critical of the interfaith concept. He doesn't talk about Schleiermacher, but that's basically where you could attribute it in terms of its origin. He says that when, for example, we talk about interfaith, we are essentially closer to polytheism than to monotheism in terms of having pluralized faith. They haven't really grasped the main point of monotheism. In short, we're more in tune with polytheism. This is a strong indictment on his part, and he calls interfaith, the interfaith mentality, a wretched notion, quote unquote. Yet, we tend to speak of interfaith in many different contexts, even as Christians. Interestingly, 20 years ago, and Issues Etc. listeners are probably quite familiar with Molly Ziegler before she was Molly Hemingway after she was married. She wrote a one half-page article in the Wall Street Journal criticizing interfaith, which she says is no faith. She was very astute in terms of recognizing the problem when we depart from the one faith concept of Ephesians 4:5, or the exclusive use of the New Testament talks about it in every one of the books of the New Testament. So Shanks, for example, is one who is highly critical of the interfaith concept that we have. And yet it's a very common term today that Christians are using, which they should not be using, because the moment you say interfaith, you imply that faith, pistis, is not exclusive.
So why have confessional Lutherans not recognized that when they use faith as synonymous for religion, it clashes with what Paul says there in Ephesians?
Only way, best explanation is that we tend not to recognize the influence of culture. I mentioned, for example, in my book that culture hides things from people, and especially from its own people in its own culture. That's the only way you can explain it. I also point out, for example, that it's difficult, perhaps, the difficulty can be somewhat evangelically, if I might say, interpreted, and putting the best construction on it, whatever one wants to use. The New Testament does not in explicit declarative sentence say that faith is exclusive. You have to perceive that, and that's where the problem lies. You can read it. Luther preached on faith. How many times did Luther not preach and talk about faith and write about faith? Over and over. So did Augustine. So did other Christians. Yet they all had read the New Testament, but they had not perceived that faith was exclusively Christian. And part of the problem goes back that they did not know that the word pistis among the Greeks and the Romans had no religious theological meaning. It was the New Testament that gave pistis the religious theological meaning. Sure, they knew that faith meant what faith meant, that it was a religious concept, but they didn't realize that to the Greeks this was foreign. And so when the New Testament speaks about faith, it does it as it's an innovative act. It's an innovative way of speaking. It assigns something to the word faith that it never had before. And that is what was missed, not intentionally, but just not seen. Now, had the New Testament declaratively said in a simple statement that faith is exclusive, we probably would not be where we are today in terms of all the confusion that exists about faith being misused, whether it's equating faith in religion, whether it's spoken of as interfaith, or seeing people who believe in anything as people of faith, whether it's Christian or not, doesn't make any difference. They're all people of faith. That's where the confusion has resulted. It's the best explanation I can find, but it's nevertheless true. We have not realized that to speak of other religions as faith is contrary to the New Testament. Actually, as I say in the book, it clashes with the New Testament.
So explain how synonymizing faith and religion makes Christianity just another religion.
Well, that's exactly right. Faith is exclusively Christian. Therefore, you cannot equate faith and religion. If you do, you deny that Christianity is the only religion. In fact, it's very, very clear. And of course, that particular statement is extremely unpopular because it clashes with the multicultural point of view that every religion, every culture, there is no wrong way, they're just different. And as a result of that, we are going along with the cultural stream. But to say faith is misused, when we apply it to other religions, we are actually saying that Christianity is not the only religion, as Jesus said, as Paul said, to other to New Testament writers as well.
Finally, with only about a minute here, Dr. Schmidt, how do we regain the right use? We can't hope for the culture to get it right, but how do Christians regain the right use of the word faith?
Well, that's I've wrestled with that question at best. That's why I wrote the book. I'm hoping that people will read it, enough people will read it, and begin to watch their language. I remember when I was in the first grade, public school, the teacher told us as students, I don't want any of you to use the word ain't. I made it a firm effort and I never used the word ain't again. It took the other kids a long time she had to correct them again and again. You have to become very conscious of language. Words mean things. And we often tend not to recognize it. Words are extremely important. And so, likewise here, we need to say, I am no longer going to speak about or use the word faith in the plural. I'm not going to equate faith and religion or use them synonymously because there is only one faith. I, as a Christian, want to abide by the New Testament, not by how the culture has been reflecting the word and the concept of faith. It takes a mental discipline, and it'll take, I might cite another example of how language often changes very unintentionally. More and more people today, when you ask them, how are you? They say, I am good, to which I have sometimes responded, hopefully, politely, I didn't ask about your character. I asked about your state of health. To say I am good is a basic violation of English grammar. Again, why do people say I am good? Because they've heard it once or twice by some significant person, perhaps on television or on a radio, and before long we echo it thoughtlessly. And that's exactly how we have done what we've done with the concept of faith when we've applied it to other religious groups. We need to discipline ourselves and say, I need to be careful and not speak like I have before. There is a difference between Christianity as conveyed in the New Testament and the other religions who have basically hijacked the term and using it now as though it is their term and was there from the beginning, which it was not. As I point out in the book, it is not an indigenous concept of any religious groups previous to Christianity or even after.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College. He's author of The Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for January, Faith Misused, Why Christianity is Not Just Another Religion. Dr. Schmidt, thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
In hour two of Issues, Etc., we'll be looking forward to Sunday morning, according to the one-year lectionary, talking with Pastor David Peterson of Gottesdienst, the Journal of Lutheran Liturgy, about a peculiar parable that Jesus tells about laborers in the vineyard in Matthew chapter 20. It turns out it has everything to do with God's generosity. I'm Todd Wilkin. Stay tuned.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program.
Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Hi, this is Pastor Clayton from Zion Lutheran Church of Muscoota, Illinois, a proud supporter of Issues Etc. Zion is a congregation firmly grounded in God's grace given in the Word and Sacraments, where we treasure the timeless beauty of the liturgy. Zion is also a vibrant, young, family-friendly congregation where you would be warmly welcomed. Zion is located at 101 South Railway Street in Muscoota, Illinois, and we would love to share God's gifts of grace with you. For more information, please visit our website at zionmuscoota.com.
Unshaken from Psalm 16:8 is the theme for the 44th academic year at Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois. We engage young adults in a Christ-centered environment, delivering academic excellence and encouraging spiritual growth. Please help us provide tuition assistance to more students by making a tax-deductible gift at melhs.org and click on the support page. Or call me, Dr. J. Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.